international armies fighting, which displaces people and puts people at risk. And at the same time, unbelievable wealth of resources, critical for our energy transition for the world, the lungs of Africa, as it's called, and it's also one of the biggest carbon sinks in the world. So the DRC should play a much more important, critical role for the international community, and it should get attention and the support its population deserves.
And briefly, what do you think Washington could do right now in terms of what's going on in the Congo?
Support the peace process. There has to be peace in the DRC to really have sustainable development and support for its population, in particular the many, many millions of children. Support the peace process that's running. Make sure men with guns come to the table and agree that this is no way to support this this great country, and then really put funding behind the work in Congo. Currently, the humanitarian resource plan for the DRC is funded, I think, by 17%. So 17% of the required funding, that's an estimation of the United Nations, is currently funded. So that gives you a sense of how big the gap is between what is needed and what we actually have. I was visiting an IDP camp there in the east last week, and Save the Children was literally the only humanitarian organization in that particular camp of 20,000 people who were displaced, who was actively providing some services there. And that is really a rare sight to see.
IDP camp is an internally displaced persons camp. I want to end with your Twitter thread. You said, firstly, we're all more connected to the DRC than we realize. The country holds over 70% of the world's cobalt supply, a mineral used in virtually all batteries, including cell phones, laptops, and electric vehicles. Just an interesting note to end on. Yanti Sirupta, we thank you so much for being with us, President and CEO of Save the Children U.S. That does it for our program. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Felstein at Guzder, Sharifa Belkadus, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Asti, Gio Rabbi, Karen Hani Masood, Hannah Elias. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. Our podcasts are available where you get your podcasts, both video and audio podcasts, and you can go to our website, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
How you doing? Just a programming note there. Yes, you were hearing the Off the Wall theme under Democracy Now! You know, we had a meeting about this, and we figured, you know, since for some reason Democracy Now! Ran 3 minutes late, rather than cut us off, why not merge the two? And that's, I think it worked. I think it sounded good, you know, the musical theme underneath. I don't know. The listeners will decide, I guess. Well.
Just some of the basic artistry that radio production is
it's magic.
Capable of.
It's utter magic, you know. It's you never know what you're going to hear over the air next. You know, sometimes you might hear the Auto A program is coming up next. You never know. You never know what that is. And, well, you have to tune in all the time to hear little gems like that. Enough of that. This is history. This is historical times we are living in. I'm thinking back to last Thursday. You and I were in a car, actually. Driving at the time. Dangerous to do that when a verdict is being announced in an important criminal case. But that was really something. Trump guilty. 34 counts.
I wasn't expecting it to be it was unanimous, right. And as far as the jury is concerned, but the counts all being guilty.
Yeah, well, I don't know how you'd... I guess, you know, if you look at them really carefully, maybe you weren't guilty of this, but you were guilty of that. But come on, it's Trump. He's guilty of it all. I mean, it's just... There's little way to find it any other way if you look at the facts of the case. And that's what I believe this jury did. It sure seems that way. It is incredible to see how the Trump people, Republicans, I guess is the best way to phrase them right now, how they are basically condemning the justice system in our country because it found one of their own to be culpable of a crime. And it's just, I want to read you something, actually, from our own representative, and I say that in double quotes, because he sure doesn't represent me. And that's, of course, our Suffolk County Representative Nick LoLota, who right away went on the Twitter and the bullhorn or whatever else they use out there. He suggested, or really more like demanded, that Governor Kathy Hochul should immediately announce her intention to pardon Trump. You know, Nick, what makes you think, first of all, I mean, yeah, obviously she's not going to do that. She's a Democrat. So why would she pardon somebody who has demonized all Democrats for as long as I can remember and just made life a living hell? Why would she do that? But just this, is there a better word than privilege that you have? This assumption that because it's one of your own, that they should get away with it, you know? That, yeah, she should pardon. Why? Why in any location should Trump be pardoned for his crimes unless we're pardoning everybody for their crimes? What is special about him? I mean, yeah, he's running for president, but the crimes took place before that happened, and people have been trying to pursue him for those crimes for a long, long time. So that's not a good excuse. Just because he decided to try and run for president again, that doesn't get you out of responsibility for your past actions. That's might be a novel approach for you, but it's kind of what the rest of the country, rest of the world, I think, believes, that you're responsible. Now, you know, there are so many people that were sent away to prison for crimes they did not commit, or for minor crimes, such as having a joint in their pockets. Well, of course, these aren't the Trumps of the world. These aren't the rich white guys that you like to hang out with. And for those just tuning in, I'm talking directly to Representative Nick LoLota. So you're saying that there should be special treatment for people like this. You know, you're saying that pardoning him, even for a political opponent, is the right thing to do. And my only question to you is, why? Why? Did you believe in the system of justice that we have in this country? Because it sure seemed to work, you know? They went by the rules, you know? He was indicted, grand jury heard the information, the indictment came down, The trial was announced. A jury of 12 random people from New York, and yeah, I know what the Republicans are saying, New York shouldn't count. And I'd love to pursue that logic a little bit as well. New York shouldn't count because why exactly? Because we're diverse? We're not all the same? Because they want the trial to take place in some Midwestern state someplace where there are few people, but of those few people, they overwhelmingly will support Trump. That's what you guys want. And that's not diversity. That's pretty much towing the party line. But that, to you, is fairness in the courts, not diversity, not a range of different opinions. Look, you gather 12 people in New York City. I'm not sure they were all from Manhattan, but in the boroughs, you know, in that region, you gather 12 people together. What do you think you can get those 12 people to agree on? You like the Mets? You like the Yankees? You like baseball? I mean, no matter what, you're going to have some disagreement. You're going to have some pushback. And New Yorkers are known for pushing back. So if you're looking for unanimity in opinion, if you're looking for people to just blindly go in one direction, you're looking in the wrong city, pal. You really are, because New York is filled with individuals. And I think that is what really is the threat here. Individuals who think for themselves and don't just do what they're told. And that, my friend, is what everybody running for office right now in the Republican Party, that is what they are doing. They are doing as they are told. How else do you explain people saying the most damning, condemning things about Donald Trump when they dared to run against him in the primaries? You remember those debates? The things that, people, what Nikki Haley said? You know, what all of them said at one point or another. And then, after they lost, oh yeah, I'm going to support him. He's the right guy. He's better than Biden. But what about all those things you said about how he should never be allowed next to the Oval Office or have access to nuclear codes or anything like that? No, that we should just ignore that? That's just something that no longer applies? Please. That is the kind of obedience that I thought we were done with in the Western world. I thought we had learned our lessons, and apparently we have not, because people are doing just that. They would rather follow somebody who can destroy them with the snap of a finger for not bowing down to him quickly enough. They'd rather support him than somebody whom they disagree with on a few things, maybe many things. You know, I like talking to people I disagree with if we can have a respectful conversation. You know, there's good in that. You learn something about your positions. You might have a chance of reaching them, influencing them. You might come to the realization that you're wrong. Or they might. That's what conversation is supposed to be about. And that's not what we're seeing here. We're seeing people like Representative Walota saying Hochul has to pardon him just because he's Trump. He's not the only one. I don't want to pick on him too much. But he's our local guy, so I got to pick on him a little bit. Syracuse Area Representative Brandon Williams went a little further, accusing quote-unquote far-left extremists of having their hands on the scales of justice, while Nassau County Representative Anthony Desposito labeled Trump's conviction the end result of a shameful witch hunt. I would call it a criminal hunt, and I would say they bagged their criminal because he committed a crime. Now, there are people who say, and it's a good point, these are misdemeanors. He should have been charged with a misdemeanor. Well, the way it works, if you commit these crimes, which normally would be misdemeanors, in pursuit of a bigger crime, such as influencing an election, then they turn into felonies. That's what happened here, and there are numerous analyses of how this took place, why it's completely valid, how it went down. Now, Allison Esposito looking to unseat Democrat Representative Pat Ryan in Hudson Valley called the verdict ludicrous, said this is reminiscent of third world countries. Really? Reminiscent of third world countries? Well, first of all, I've been to the third world. It's not a hellhole. There are plenty of good people doing good things there. Not every regime is corrupt. But what we had here was a jury making a decision, playing by all the rules. And that's to be condemned because they didn't reach the answer that you wanted them to reach. You see, that's what I have such a problem with. It's basically the system is wrong. Well, what system do we replace that with exactly? A system that has different rules for different people? Well, we've kind of had that system for a while. And this is evidence that system is not impervious to challenge. This is a victory for the common person, the person who does not get the kinds of opportunities that someone like Trump would get, does not have the opportunity to appeal to appellate courts and possibly even the Supreme Court, where he has many friends. This is a victory for them. But Representative Mike Lawler called it a sad day for America that undermines our electoral process and our judicial system. Well, Mike, please go into detail as to how exactly that is true. Because, again, I see the system working precisely as it's supposed to be working. You know, these people, they say that Donald Trump has been targeted, and I agree. He absolutely has been targeted. But not by the people seeking to prosecute him. He's being targeted by the people who follow him. Because they believe that if your name is Donald Trump, different rules apply. And if anything is directed towards him of a hostile or inconvenient nature, it should be destroyed. Because he is the person to follow. He is the target for you guys. Mike Lawler went on to say, our election should be decided at the ballot box by voters, not by partisan prosecutors with a political axe to grind. Well, I believe the election is still on. It's just that now we know a bit more. And we would have known a lot more were it not for all the appeals and all the legal maneuvering that has been taking place because of all the advantages that he has. Representative Mark Molinaro responded to the verdict saying, this is how we're going to do politics now? Well, first of all, Mark, it's a trial. It's not politics. You're making it politics, but it's not politics. Not through spirited debates, but by weaponizing the justice and court system to attack a political rival. Okay, again, we're having debates. And if you truly believe that Biden was somehow behind this, first of all, I thought Biden was incompetent. I thought he was senile. I thought he was incapable of doing anything. And now, suddenly, he's the mastermind that is putting his political opponents in prison. Which is it? Pick a lane. As predicted, many of these statements fell in line with comments from other House Republicans, including more conservative lawmakers like our good friend Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio, who called the verdict a travesty of justice. I believe you used someone else's description there, but whatever. There's only so many ways you can say the same thing. You know, I want to play something because this is rather amusing. Trump gave a bit of a speech in the Trump Tower the day afterwards. That's audio from the Trump Tower. I just want you to hear how he begins his speech when he walks in. You know, this is a guy that has just been found guilty on 34 counts. And, you know, is he going to say he respects the courts? He's going to fight this. He's going to do whatever. Let's listen to how he addresses the situation.
Everybody, this is a case where if they can do this to me, they can do this to anyone. And these are bad people These are, in many cases, I believe, sick people. When you look at our country, what's happening where millions and millions of people are flowing in from all parts of the world, not just South America, from Africa, from Asia, from the Middle East, and they're coming in from jails and prisons, and they're coming in from mental institutions.
If I can just step in here for a second, I'm sorry to interrupt, but within 10 seconds, he's attacking immigrants. He's accusing them of all kinds of... Immigrants didn't put him on trial. His fellow citizens put him on trial. But, yeah, you do you. Continue.
And insane asylums, they're coming in from all over the world into our country. And we have a president and a group of fascists that don't want to do anything about it. Because they could right now, today, he could stop it. But he's not. They're destroying our country. Our country is in very bad shape. And they're very much against me saying these things. They want to raise your taxes by 4 times. They want to stop you from having cars with their ridiculous mandates that make it impossible for you to get a car or afford a car.
You heard that, Kyle, right? No cars. Cars are done. Finished. Yeah. Okay. Thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Wow. All right. Let's listen to a little more, but there's only so much we can do.
Make it very possible for China to build all of our cars. It's a very serious problem that we have. We just went through one of many experiences where we had a conflicted judge, highly conflicted. There's never been a more conflicted judge. Now, I'm under a gag order, which nobody's ever been under. No presidential candidate's ever been under a gag order before. I'm under a gag order, nasty gag order, where I've had to pay thousands of dollars in penalties and fines and was threatened with jail. Think of it. I'm the leading candidate. I'm leading Biden by a lot, and I'm leading the Republicans to the point where that's over. So I'm the leading person for president, and I'm under a gag order by a man that can't put 2 sentences together, given by a court. And they are in total conjunction with the White House and the DOJ, just so you understand. This is all done by Biden and his people.
All right. That's about as much of this as I can take. You can find it. Go to C-SPAN. You'll hear the whole thing. But this is a derailment going down a mountain. I don't know if he didn't get any sleep the night before, but he should have put together something a bit more cohesive. Right away, attacking immigrants for no particular reason, accusing Biden of being the mastermind behind this, attacking the judge. He even violates the gag order that he's railing against here. He thinks by not mentioning Michael Cohen's name, that makes it okay for him to attack a witness. He was given specific orders not to do that. And then if he did it again, the judge would have no choice but to put him in jail. So now it'll be interesting to see what happens, because he did just that. He didn't name him. He said, but you know who I'm talking about? And then he gave very specific information. So there was no possibility of it being anyone else. Yeah, he thinks he's being clever. He's really not being clever at all. Yeah. Meanwhile, Michael Cohen says his family was doxxed following the Trump. I love how a hacker word, dox, has made it into the lexicon. It's like a mainstream. Everyone knows. Your grandparents know what being doxxed is. I swear, in the 90s, we only said that on IRC. And okay, you know what? I guess success, victory for us. So family was doxxed, and this is serious. This is no laughing matter here. He was a key witness. Go ahead, Carl.
I think you forget how much of the what was called at one point the digital divide has closed.
Uh-huh.
That's something that we, I think, who cover this stuff and talk about it on our other program and elsewhere in our lives, we relate to it as an in-circle, but don't realize sort of just how wide that circle has become.
Yeah.
And as you said, as you pointed out, it's like widely accepted, used in news news reports and other colloquial language. And that divide, like, from what we remember of the early years or the 2000, you know, the turn of the century or the 90s, late 90s, it was much more jargon, something that was only used by people that understood the acronym or understood the various slang terms.
And, you know, another one of those terms, pwned. P-W-N-E-D. It's supposed to be owned. And it means that you've been hacked. You've been your information has been compromised. But people, you know, the P is right next to the O on the keyboard, so people would constantly be typing pwned instead of owned, and that got adopted too. And people say that on a regular basis.
It's hard though. Like it's a gift, but it's also like it's hard for us to, I think, grapple with though. And we need to remember the current environment. I mean that about so many different subjects, but this for the sake of language and the sake of being understood, this is something I think it's a positive. It's a win. It helps people maybe protect themselves better and talk about digitization of information and personal information, but also. We might feel like there's a loss too, or like a new terms that might be falling under the radar when so many people think they know that as the latest thing. Like when there's perhaps other things we should be turning our attention to as well. I don't know. Definitely. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. Like. Or that we continue to think that it is underground language when it isn't, or something.
No, it's not anymore. It's not anymore.
Or maybe it will influence how we coin phrases going forward, so that they are more approachable to wider users of networks.
I don't think you can ever recapture that period where it was relatively few people, and what we didn't know at the time was that a lot more people were watching. And writing books and making movies, and then before you knew it, that little world was not so little anymore, and basically everybody wanted a piece of it, and it kind of lost the magic. But we have the BBS printouts to prove how magical it was. So
it's good to point out that kind of milestone.
That
is unsaid, but it is remarkable.
Go to textfiles.com. You can read all about it and see the old BBS printouts and things like that, as well as other magic of the time.
Back to the story.
How did we get off on that? Okay.
Well, it was a noteworthy, like, little subtext.
Well, because Michael Cohen got doxxed. So, yeah, here we go again. Okay, so Michael Cohen, as you know, a key witness, the key witness, he said his family was doxxed after Trump was convicted. What happened was, following Thursday's conviction, phone numbers and addresses for Cohen's wife and children were posted on a site. This happened on Monday, a site that has been used to target other figures involved in Trump's sprawling legal battles. That's according to Advanced Democracy, which is a nonprofit research group. In a statement to The Hill, Cohen said it's sad that the doxing occurred. What sad times we are living through when people resort to this type of doxing stupidity to redress their grievances, his statement said. I used to see statements like that all the time on #2600 on IRC. but yeah, he says it better. Judge Juan Merchan, the New York judge overseeing the hush money case, ordered in March for the identities of the jury to be kept secret because there was a likelihood of bribery, jury tampering, or physical injury and harassment. And I got to say, I am very worried about that jury, the 12 people. I don't know if Trump people are hostile towards the alternates. Maybe they are. But those people, if their identities ever get out, I can't believe this is like a mob trial. This is like you're worried about what Tony Soprano is going to do to you. If these people have their identities revealed, will they be safe? And I don't think they will be. I don't see how they can be, judging from some of the things I've heard, some of the things I've seen being reported, and just even quotes from people in Congress, that makes me worry about what could happen to these people. And all they did was their duty. They showed up for jury duty. They served. They did what they were supposed to do. They are not the problem, if there is any problem here. They did their job. We should be thanking them. But, yeah, this is just so wrong. Targeting his wife and his kids? You know, even targeting him when what he did was testify. You kind of knew what he was going to say. He did his job, too.
That's really personal, because I think that's something that he cites for having his conscience, having this whole thing weigh on him, is that he thought of his family. And so for them to attack them in this way just really shows how personal it's gotten.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it always has been with Cohen. And, you know, I'm not 100% sure how I feel about him. I mean, I remember him from the days where he was the pit bull next to Trump. And he was a genuinely unlikable person. And I don't know, it means something to me when I see somebody who's done bad things, admit to doing those bad things, and try and explain why they were doing those bad things. You kind of feel for them, because their life has been destroyed by all of this, and now they're explaining what was in their mind and what has happened to them since. Remember, this guy has gone to prison, and he's gone to prison for lying on behalf of Donald Trump. So, you know, if you go to prison for that, it's not too much of a stretch to think that maybe the guy you were lying for also is guilty of something. And that is exactly where we wound up. And what's fascinating about all this is that this is only the first case. This is only the first case. There are more cases to come. Except for the one in Florida, where that judge is on his payroll and will never do anything that will hurt Trump. That's pretty apparent from her actions. But there are other cases, and yes, they will use every dirty trick in the book to try and tarnish reputations, destroy careers, intimidate people, whatever. But I think after what happened on Thursday, we're all a little less afraid. And we all realize that, the emperor doesn't have any clothes on, and people are starting to realize it. So, appeals, yeah. well, he said, this is long from over. Is that a phrase? This is long from over? It looks weird when you say it. This is long from over.
It's sort of a cinematic dialogue thing.
How would you say that? I don't know how to say it now. This is far from over. That's what you're supposed to say. This is far from over. Not this is long from over. What the hell, Donald? Oh, okay. He's stressed. He said that moments after the conviction. So, okay, I'll let this one go. He's already outlined the plan to appeal a verdict that he labeled a scam on Friday. Sentencing set for July 11th, 4 days before the Republican convention. Boy, this is going to be an interesting summer, okay? A lot going on in a relatively short period of time. You've got the Olympics, you've got Euro, you've got the Republican convention, you've got the Democratic convention, within driving distance of each other, by the way. One's in Milwaukee, one's in Chicago. You've got all kinds of social unrest based on various world events. I'm sure I'm leaving things out. But it's going to be an action-packed summer. Anyway, even if the former, possibly future president could persuade voters to ignore his conviction, the appellate courts might not be so sympathetic. Several legal experts cast doubt on his chances of success and noted that the case could take years to snake through the courts, all but ensuring he'll still be a felon when voters head to the polls in November. The former president's supporters are calling on the U.S. Supreme Court to intervene, though even that is highly unlikely. In a more likely appeal to a New York court, Trump would have avenues to attack the conviction, the experts say, but far fewer than he has claimed. The experts noted that the judge whose rulings helped shape the case stripped some of the prosecution's most precarious arguments and evidence from the trial. The appeal will be a referendum on the judge who steered the trial through political and legal minefields, even as Trump hurled invective at him and his family. Justice Mitran, a no-nonsense former prosecutor, said that he was keenly aware and protective of Mr. Trump's rights, including his right to defend himself against political attacks. Mark Zarderer, a veteran New York litigator who sits on a committee that screens applicants for the same court that will hear Mr. Trump's appeal, said that Justice Mitran avoided pitfalls that often doom convictions. This case has none of the usual red flags for reversal on appeal, he said. The judge's demeanor was flawless. And even if Justice Mitran's rulings provide little fodder, Trump could challenge the foundation of the prosecution's case. Trump's lawyers note that Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan District Attorney, used a novel theory to charge Mr. Trump with 34 felony counts of falsifying business records. In New York, that crime is a misdemeanor unless the records were faked to conceal another crime. To elevate the charges to felonies, Bragg argued that Trump had falsified the records to cover up violations of a little-known state law against conspiring to win an election by unlawful means. Trump's conspiracy occurred during his first run for the White House, when Trump arranged to buy and bury damaging stories about his sex life, including a porn star's story of a tryst. He was trying to influence the 2016 election, according to Bragg. In an appeal, Trump's lawyers are expected to argue that Bragg inappropriately stretched the state election law to cover a federal campaign. And they could claim that the false records law itself does not apply to Trump's case. Barry Cannons, a retired judge, expert on criminal procedure, teaches at Brooklyn Law School, said, "I certainly don't think there has been a prosecution of falsifying business records like this one. This is all uncharted territory as far as an appellate issue." But none of this criticism will surprise Mr. Bragg, who is a career prosecutor who has shown himself to be comfortable with innovative applications of law. His head of appeals, Stephen Wu, a fast-talking Yale-trained litigator, attended much of the trial. When the verdict was read, he was sitting in the second row to Bragg's right, and it is now Mr. Wu's job to ensure that Trump does not escape his conviction. So, will Teflon Don escape this time? We'll just have to see, I guess. I'm looking forward to this. I really am.
I'm tired of talking about it, unfortunately.
Well, we haven't talked about it yet. Not this. Not the conviction. I mean, he's a convicted felon now. It's happened.
Okay, I'm weary of even the thought of talking about it if what you're saying is true, if we haven't talked about it yet.
Well, yes, I am too.
I'm like beyond. I don't have the adjectives to describe how disinterested I am in.
Well, this is the voice of America right now that Kyle is channeling, because
go
yes,
America.
We are all sick and tired of just hearing about this guy. But just comfort yourself in realizing that this may be turning a corner that will change what happens in November and put an end to this once and for all. Maybe we can all go back to talking to each other and living a somewhat normal life. I don't know. I hope for these things.
Or working collectively on other things.
Other things.
In our national and local interest. Again, the airtime alone, it's just, we'll never get it back.
Well, okay, that's a good opportunity to read a listener letter, which we do get, OTW at 2600.com, that's 2600.com. Hello, Emmanuel and crew. I just got a chance to listen to last week's episode where you were talking about boiled peanuts. As somebody who, please don't shake the boiled peanuts, Kyle. You have no idea how that makes my insides feel. I may have made a horrible mistake buying those at that gas station. No. Just please put it down. It's a big can, like a Campbell soup can, and it's got boiled peanuts inside in some kind of a liquid. Ew. Anyway, as somebody who lives in Florida, I can tell you that I do not understand the fascination the Southerners have with boiled peanuts, some even calling it the caviar of the South. The caviar of the South. Wow, that's an image. However, if you do want to give them a try and finally crack that can... No, stay away from me, Kyle. Do not crack that can. No, please. No, don't do that. If you accidentally open it, then it's bad. Oh, boy. If you finally crack that can open, just heat them up in the microwave with the brine, according to the can's directions. Then drain the brine off and just eat them, I guess. But you shouldn't put the can in the microwave, though. I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to do that. The brine only is really used to keep them from drying out during shipping and when you heat them up. It's very similar to the liquid that olives are packed in. I like olives. If this is like olives, that'd be nice, but I don't know. I don't think they are. Enjoy. I hope you have a great day. Thank you, Reverend Jedi 83. And the Reverend also says, may the hacking gods smile upon you. Always appreciate that. Always appreciate the...
Yeah, you really cannot imagine how much we needed to hear that right now.
Something you might need to hear, Kyle, which is, I think, more good news.
Are you okay? Do you need some peanut brine?
Please, get that away from me. Get that, or I'm going to do something over the air that I don't think has been done over the air in at least 10 years.
Okay, all right.
no, hopefully it's never happened over the air.
I don't know what our board is rated at as far as spilling.
Well, I know what our student
peanuts.
Board is rated at, and they will not tolerate this. So let me tell you some good news. The Michigan Central train station is reopening. The once blighted monolithic Michigan Central train. I passed by this near Detroit. It's a massive building, all abandoned. It's for decades was a symbol of Detroit's decline. It has new life now following a massive 6-year multi-million dollar renovation to create a hub for mobility projects and the rebirth of the Motor City. The hulking scavenger ravaged structure that ominously shadowed the city's Corktown neighborhood is now home to Ford Motor Company and the centerpiece of a sprawling 30-acre mobility innovation district. The building's first tenant is Google's Code Next Detroit. Oh, that's a weird name. Computer science education program. What kind of noise is that you're making?
Well, I'm trying to figure out what electric noises are instead of vroom, vroom.
I'm not sure either. But anyway, they're supposed to move in. It's supposed to move in by late June. Grand opening ceremonies include an outdoor concert on Thursday with tours for the public starting on Friday. The train station is perhaps the most powerful story in Michigan of the power of historic renovation, said Detroit Regional Chamber President and Chief Executive Sandy Barua. To turn something that was blight into something that is hugely attractive and is an anchor as opposed to a deficit is huge. And it really is. I had no idea this was even going on, but it's incredible to read about this. There's been a bunch of TV reports about it as well. The train station's history reflects the city's fortunes during its heyday as the world's car capital, and later misfortunes as thousands of auto workers and other residents fled Detroit for life in the suburbs. Last train pulled out in 1988. For years after the building fell into disrepair, neglect, and abandonment, it became a destination for the curious and urban explorers seeking out such places. Other buildings in Detroit, like factories, suffered the same or a similar fate. But due to Michigan Central's size, it became a symbol of the city's decline. Long story here, talking about all kinds of things.
I'm still caught up on the fled for life in the suburbs. I mean, that's always good advice. Flee for your life, everyone, just generally.
Okay, the reopening of the train station also comes as Detroit apparently has turned the corner from national joke to national attraction. Nearly a decade after exiting its embarrassing bankruptcy, the Motor City has stabilized its finances, improved city services, staunched the population losses that saw more than 1 million people leave since the 1950s, and made inroads in cleaning up blight across its 139 square miles. You know what I'm looking for, Kyle?
No.
Well, talking about this, the reopening of the train station and, Michigan Central Station and all that, it's going to be a centerpiece. Here's a quote from Mayor Mike Duggan. The abandoned train station was the national symbol of Detroit's decline and bankruptcy. So the fact that not only has the city come back, but that the train station has come back in such a spectacular way, and the place where we're going to be designing the automobiles of the future, it's now about the future, not about the past. There's not a word in this article about the trains.
You know, I was going to actually quiz you while you were searching there.
Yeah.
Because that occurred to me that like, okay, so you're opening this station. Is this, what is this, a regional hub? We're talking long-distance travel? Are we doing above-ground light? Or Crosstown transit?
I don't know. It's
you have mixed mode. Is there a bus station and a like a bike parking and good pedestrian access? There's no talk of the connections. What cities and towns can we expect travelers from?
The mayor. This quote I just read. The train station has come back in such a spectacular way. The reopening of the train station comes as Detroit has turned the corner. Okay, it's a train station. Where are the damn trains? Why would you not even mention the trains in the article? And, I'm scanning other articles. I'm looking for the word trains, and they just say the train station, but you need trains in a train station, don't you? Do I miss on this? I know the building has been bought by Ford, okay? I was trying to, digest that without getting sick, okay?
Never made a train in their lives.
Ford is the reason why rail service and mass transit collapsed in this country for a time, but it's coming back, with Biden in the White House and all that.
We're seeing all this
investment into rail and into mass transit and all that. So obviously this is another indication of that. The fact that Ford happens to own it, yes, it's not the most tasteful thing, but if that's what it takes to rebuild the building, then okay, I'll accept it. But where's the damn trains? I'm sorry.
Yeah, you can't just make like a gaudy food court or mixed-use retail.
No, then you have Denver, remember the train station in Denver?
No, it's not knocked,
They had trains there. I'm not knocking it. They had a couple of trains, but really nothing near what they used to have, and they had all these restaurants that were train-themed, but they didn't have very many trains. But, yeah, Denver, they could do better. But this, I'm not even seeing any trains. Okay, I'm on the Wikipedia page now, so if there's ever any information, that's where I'll find it.
I could understand if there was perhaps a, phased opening where they wanted like anchor tenants, they wanted to make it unobtrusive, like walkable space before debuting sort of any kind of platform or revamping of a ticket or other kind of service there, but it seems suspicious. Suspiciously absent. Yeah,
well,
I don't know.
They're calling it a train station. Why would you call it a train station if there's no trains? And, if there are trains, I've been perusing news stories, and I first heard about this through a TV story, and I realized, it was nice, the building looked good, but they didn't talk about trains. They talked about trains of the past, but they didn't talk about trains of the future. So why wouldn't anybody even be interested in that? Why would anybody, ask, so when do the trains come? It's a train station, That's kind of the whole point.
I'm sure it'll be fine. It'll all work out.
Oh, whoa. Okay. Yeah, thank God for Wikipedia. Okay, CEO of Ford Land. What's Ford Land? I guess that's what they're calling this whole complex. Yeah, because they also took over a book depository. That doesn't quite sound right. But there's the only other place I heard of a book depository was in Dallas. But I guess they're all over the place. The CEO of Fordland, Dave Dubinsky, stated during an interview with the Detroit Free Press that Ford planned to retain four of the passenger tracks at Michigan Central Station in the event that Amtrak returns from the station in New Center, as well as for potential commuter rail. Previous Amtrak routes that utilized Michigan Central Station included the Wolverine, Lake Cities, Twilight Limited, and Niagara Rainbow. Now, not one of those trains is still running, by the way. Not one. There have been other rail-related projects in the area around the station in recent years. What do you mean around the station? You have this massive train station, and you're going to go around the station? Come on. The U.S. Department of Transportation awarded $244 million in grants for high-speed rail upgrades between Chicago and Detroit. So, yeah, you know what? I think this is a logical place for that high-speed rail to wind up in Detroit. So, look, it's fine that Ford owns this. It's fine that Ford is doing all this. And, yeah, have a concert. Have Google in there. Whatever. But have the trains, too. Be excited about the trains. Cars aren't going anywhere. Despite what you might have heard Trump say earlier, it's going to be impossible to have a car. No, that's not true. But let's pump some investment into our train infrastructure, because boy, it pays off. Just look around the world, you'll see how that's so true.
For all the time and effort that has been spent in designing cities around the concept of car travel, it's certainly deserving of a revisiting of an era and a time, at least the excitement and enthusiasm around rail projects, revisit that again.
Yeah. And Detroit, you know, it's a major city, despite the fact that a lot of people moved out. And can you even take a train to Detroit? I don't think you can. I don't remember a train ever pulling up in Detroit when I was riding trains out west. But I'd like to be able to do that. I'd like to be able to take a train to Detroit.
Yeah, and connect that entire area, connect with it, certainly. It would add a lot, I think.
All right. Well, that was fun. I didn't realize that story would take such a turn. You realize, I don't know if you noticed this, Kyle, but elections are happening everywhere. I don't know what it is, but South Africa had elections, India had elections, Mexico had elections, and this weekend, all of Europe is going to have a massive election, and that's going to be interesting. The UK is having an election on July 4th, and I understand we're having an election at some point in our lifetimes.
It's weird, like the Indian election, they don't have a result for like a month or two because they like tabulate all these votes from like far-flung places. It's massively like logistically involved. But then like the Mexican election, both of the lead candidates were female, which is a first. That was like sort of an exciting milestone and fun to be bear witness to. And yeah, the European elections, it's really important, I think, for that area because like there's a baked in national diversity to that assembly, that union of countries. And any time they do kind of union-wide messaging from the EU government, it's a big deal, and everybody has different takes on it, and it's hard to kind of come up with a way of messaging that hits everybody in their distinct nations with the same kind of emphasis. And they, I think, did a decent job. I saw some of the ads encouraging people to participate because that's a real problem, getting people voting in the EU. So they did some pieces where it like had people speaking about their participation from like the first person in their language with subtitles, just talking about like the sort of European Union sense of responsibility as a citizen.
Well, it's fascinating. I think it's a bit inspirational to see all these different cultures coming together in a unified body like this. Now, I believe Belgium, it's required that you vote, so they don't have a problem with turnout there. Other countries, though, as you say, it is an issue. There is a fear that the far right will gain power based on people's anti-immigration feelings and anger at economy. Same thing that happens here, anger at the economy and crime rates and things like that. For some reason, the far right, even though they're responsible for a lot of that, somehow gain whenever that happens.
It's true. There's a serious movement that is sort of pan-national and goes across all of those, many of those industrialized nations. And the tenor of, like, the way people talk about the EU and its importance and or just how often they get things wrong or stumble or don't advantage the individual member states evenly or in the right ways, or they are seen as overly bureaucratic, like, and not really sort of toothless, right? Not able to affect stuff. But they, I hope, understand that out, like, from the outside, there are certain things that the European Union does and can harness when they're focused and communicating adequately. They look incredibly powerful and incredibly polished from even our American vantage. I know that's unusual to hear Americans not be exceptional in their rhetoric, but truly, like, there's laudable things and policies and approaches and ways they've handled situations. I think of privacy law, but I'm thinking of a lot of different avenues.
Yeah, yeah.
There's just stuff they can do and organize that we cannot. We're not organized in the same way. And I could go on and on. I mean, just the diversity of language, the unique characteristics of the EU are something they should not forget in making these sort of unified voting decisions, because believe it or not, from the outside looking in, it does not seem as dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
It's a respected, maybe beyond what the member states might give it credit for internally.
It's easy to make fun of it. It's easy to point the finger at all the people arguing. But, you know, when they argue, it seems to be a lot more respectful and a lot more open to different opinions, and changes seem to happen quicker as well. On different levels. So we're going to see how that turns out. I believe it's Sunday. In fact, I'd recommend Euronews as the best source for watching that or learning about that, too. They have a number of features and documentaries. You can see them on YouTube, Euronews, or if you have Optimum, they're Channel 103. And also BBC News, formerly BBC World News, on Optimum, Channel 104. And also you can find them all over the place online. Even though they're not in the EU anymore, they still have decent coverage and all kinds of really, really good documentaries that they air over the weekend. So all kinds of things about Ukraine and Gaza and all of that. Just things that I mentioned, the other war last week. The second part of that aired over the weekend. And track that down online. We'll talk about Israel and Gaza and the future with a different perspective. All right, that's going to just about do it for us here tonight for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. I urge people to keep listening to WUSB for all kinds of different perspectives and music and news and all of that. Write to us, otw@2600.com.
Yes, thanks so very, very much for your listening, everyone. And do not forget to communicate there or elsewhere in your life.
And have a happy Pride. It's only just beginning.
Oh, please. Yes. Bring on the Pride.
This is for our friend Don. Get used to it.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around the bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry. But there's rich folks eating in a fancy dining car. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming. I know I can't be free. But those people keep a moving, and that's what tortures me. Thank you.
was mine. I bet I'd move it on a little farther down the line, far from Folsom Prison. That's where I want to stay. And I'd let that lonesome whistle